This one-up podcast is brought to you by the Laptop Experts, makers of the Toshiba Satellite X205, a laptop with enough power to destroy a small planet. Visit www.toshiba.com/expert.
Hello and welcome to the, what are we going to call this? The not the GFW radio podcast. Or maybe this is a GFW radio podcast, but we are missing a bunch of people and we have new people here. So it's going to be fun. Or maybe it's just the brodeo. What do you guys say?
Is it the brodeo?
Brodeo.
The brodeo works because you just get some dudes on and we just talk.
All right. Welcome to the brodeo. I'm here. Sean Elliott's here. And also here are, I'll let these fellows introduce themselves.
Robert Ashley. And
Brian Intihar from EGM.
Yay. Brian Intihar, first time appearance on the brodeo.
I finally got the big call.
Called you up.
Yep. I was very excited to come up to varsity.
Uh-huh. Oh, don't say that about EGM.
No, of course not. I'm just kidding. But I've always talked about Sean about coming on, so I'm really happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. Think of it, it's more like junior college to universities.
That's right. I know.
It's not JV and varsity.
Well, I think it's more like taking the GED.
You think?
Yeah. You gotta take the GED to get to the brodeo.
Between hanging out at one dude's house and going over and hanging out at another dude's house.
Yeah. So we are missing Darren Gladstone, Sean Malloy, Ryan Scott, all for various and sundry reasons. Actually, they're here. They're just tied up and we're knocking out all of them.
Well, you don't got to get all specific, man.
We need to tell everyone what's going on. So Ryan is having his bunions looked at
by Darren. So that's why neither of them are here. That's something involving the two of them.
Yeah. Darren works wonders with a bunion file.
So
he
they
really
say.
Got me.
That's how he got the job, year. Actually.
Yeah.
And Sean Malloy's on vacation. Lucky bastard. So the rest of us are here. And Mr. Elliott, you were going to – I know the kids were going crazy for your Safeway stories.
Oh, shit.
You want to start us off with more?
Well, because I saw some people were thinking that the calls in the beginning were now some regular feature, and it just happened that the first one was sort of unpremeditated and just happened, and then I did one more, but that's not a regular feature. But there is a call that I made that fits in with Safeway in that story I told. So, I mean, that guy, Billy Compton, old Billy Compton I worked with, he was tough to deal with.
Wait, was he the guy, the peppy?
He was the Coke peppy, guy, Frito-Lay.
Okay.
And he was tough to work with, but he was kind of like, I don't know, I could forgive him. I could forgive his faults. But there was this other guy there, Steve, and he was huge. We called him, you know, Steve-O at the time. That was, you know, it just made sense. So, but like, as in Steve, oh, he's unbelievable. Eats so much, it's inconceivable.
Steve, did you sing this in front of his?
No,
to him?
No. Every time he'd turn around. And we were tough like that. So this dude, he was huge, right? And he would always talk about how he was in the Navy. So we just like kind of privately wonder like what he possibly did, like if he served as displacement on a submarine, you know, like they'd let him out when they wanted to come to the surface and then they'd string him back in when they wanted to visit the depths. But so eventually I got into a tiff with him, and again, it was over, you know, following their customer service policy. And I just said, all right, Steve-O, I'm out of here. And then I just walked out. But after that, that wasn't good enough. I had to let Steve-O know indirectly, as it were, how much I appreciated him. So I started off with a series of calls. I told one before, and that was what we did to the donut case. So I won't revisit that. Most people should recognize that when I say the donut case. But then I called like the bakery one time, and I made a series of calls to every department. But so I called the bakery and I said, you know, hi, my name is, you know, Ron Sadler. I'm calling from Allied Signal, and we're about to celebrate our 5th anniversary being in business. And what we want is, you know, we're going to have a company picnic, and I want the biggest cake that you've ever made. It's like, the thing is, this is really important to us. And this cake needs to show, you know, it needs to represent Allied Signal's power, the fact that we're growing. And I know that you're an artist, and I want you to show me how much of an artist you really are. And here's the thing, you know, you knock this one out, I'm going to come in there and we're going to buy everything. You know, we're going to get our fruit there. We're going to go to your deli and get everything else there. And I'm going to tell your manager that all of it is because of you. So what I want you to do, and I want a whole city basically And I've seen you've got ballpark cakes, you know, for kids. It's like a baseball field. I want that in the middle of this town. I want a big building. If you got to put frosting on cardboard, that's okay. But like a shining beacon for all the city in the middle, Allied Signal. Make this as many stories as you can. It was like, I just kept telling her all the stuff to put in it, you know, everything that was like, what other kind of cakes do you have? We could just take stuff from all those, you know, we can make a garden in there. And then I just kept saying, you know, how like, I know you're an artist. And she was like, no, I'm not an artist. But anyway, so I followed through with the whole thing. And of course, I still knew people that worked there. And they actually made this thing, and it was the saddest piece of crap that they've ever seen, with like the junkiest slate gray, you know, some like Stalin condominium type looking thing in the middle. And it had the ballpark and everything, and of course no one picked it up, so it went to the break room, and it helped out all the employees. They got to eat it, and that was.
So wait, how did that take revenge on the fat team?
Yeah.
Anyway, what did you need?
I made him eat more cake.
What did he do?
I don't know.
What did he do to you other than be a big fat guy?
Yeah.
Just the usual stuff. Their draconian policies about watching you every minute.
Oh, he was a boss.
You're loving everyone. Yeah, he was another boss.
He wasn't a peer that you were just picking.
Oh, no. The stores were always, you know, run by, you know, a multitude of managers, and they all work together. Some are better than others, you know, and.
So, Jeff, does this make you nervous that one day you will be the butt of some Sean Elliott cake-making story?
No, I guess, man. I could be, but I don't know. It's funny because, you know, I spent years and years, you know, I flipped burgers. I was a busboy. I washed dishes. I mean, I've had all the fucking, you know, I had one job for one day as a phone sale. Not even a phone salesman. I was the, what do they call it? It was like a stringer. For a salesman, like you had to get down on the line long enough to talk to a real salesman. I lasted one day in that, so I've had some shit ass jobs.
And I sold algae pills.
Algae pills.
Yeah, people would eat algae. Yeah, I can't remember the company, but I did it for a whole summer. I just took orders for algae pills.
Wow. What do algae Holy pills shit. Do?
I don't know, but people bought them in bulk, man. They bought them. Oh, it was ridiculous. Like, I didn't even have to try, man. The phone was ringing off the hook every day.
This phone job I had was terrible because it was for selling hardware supplies to retailers. So it was like a wholesaler that was doing cold calls to retailers, like, you know, buy our hammers because we got the best hammers. So, like, I wasn't even, like, selling them. I was just, like, trying to get them on the line for the real tool salesman to come on. But, like, I didn't know fucking shit about any of this
that
stuff.
That seems,
you know,
backwards, too, because the most important part of the call is the introduction, you know, the first
exactly.
30 seconds.
Right, and so they got some dumbass 17-year-old kid who doesn't know anything that's not, like, you know, pinball-related because that's how old I am. You know, it wasn't, like, video games back then, but I didn't know anything about the product at all. I'm still not a handy guy. I'm a grown man. I still have to hire people to do shit because I'm not interested. So, you know, I would have to call these guys up, and it's a hardware store. That's what this guy's living, you know, and they get some call, you know, the phone rings, and it's some dumbass kid going, you know, hi, how are you? And I'm like looking at the sheet, like what I'm supposed to, you know, how you doing out there today? It's nice out, huh? And then, what do you want? Like, well, I was just wondering if you guys had any need. We're having a special on screws.
And I'd be like, what kind of screws?
They would actually,
they would ask,
they
me, like,
didn't hang up.
They would ask like two questions down to where I was lost, where I had no clue. Like, oh, well, are those like, you know, whatever, they'd throw out some, you know, 240 by something, and I'd go, oh, what?
please then, hold for real sales.
Yeah, that's what I'd have to do. If I could get them to not hang up on me, then I'd say, yeah, exactly. Please hold for. But I lasted one day. I was out the door that day. In fact, by about the 6th hour, and I had not made one call, not one call had gone through to the salesman. The supervisor, like, walks over. And he just, like, gives me the – he, like, points his finger towards him, you know. And I just, like, took my jacket off the chair because I knew. I was just like, yeah, bye, guys. Have a nice summer. I'm out. Wow. Anyway, point of that whole long diversion is that I've had shit jobs. I've had really shitty bosses. So I understand what it's like to hate your boss and be that way. And if you hate me, Sean, I'll understand.
Oh, I've had terrible bosses.
Didn't you work at EB?
Yeah, I mean, I worked at a GameStop. My guy was a crook. He was an absolute crook. He would
like a thief. Crook?
Yeah, he would like. Wow. I mean, he would buy. He'd like buy the Pokemon cards, all the Pokemon cards. Buy the, like, open them up, and then like sell the individual cards. And we had no SKUs in the computer for we had no excuse for like the individual Pokemon cards, but he'd still find a way to sell them and then like take money in his own pocket and like short ship like you know CD
in the back,
blank
like,
CDs and stuff
going through for like
oh yeah like oh my god like the Charizard man was big deal man big deal Charizard that and Mewtwo man oof man
hey, kid, I got a Charizard you want to check him out
but like it was I mean freaky he would dress as a Pikachu. He bought this big Pikachu outfit because he thought he'd drive more business. And like,
oh my god!
Oh, dude, it was really weird. And he was obsessed with wrestling too. So he would he would go to all these like these wrestling events and have like you know all like this, like the wrestlers like sign stuff. We had Stone Cold Steve Austin call the store once, which was pretty funny. But I had a boss that was terrible. For another job, I was in PR, and my car broke down, so I had to go home that afternoon to kind of get it fixed because I was living in LA. You need a car in LA really bad, obviously. And so it was like 6 o'clock. I signed off, and she calls me. And she goes, "What'd you do all day?" I'm like, "Well, I did this and this and that." And she goes, "Well, let me see what you did." I'm like, "What?" She goes, "I want to see evidence that you're really working." I'm like, "No." I'm like, "If you don't trust me, I'm never coming back." And like for 45 minutes, we had a conversation about, you know, I'm like, "You can't trust me. I've been at the company for like 6 months," and back and forth. And finally,
what
she's like,
"What evidence were you supposed to provide?"
Like, I don't know. Like, I was working at like a press release or something like that. I'm like, "No." I'm like, "If you don't," which I actually was doing real work. And the thing was, at lunchtime, she goes, "Why don't you take the rest of the day off?" I'm like, "Oh, no, I'll work from home. No, it's no problem." And that was just the beginning of the nightmare of working at that company. That was just, I mean, if I was taking a shit at 9 o'clock in the morning and 9:01, she didn't want to know why I was at my desk at 9 o'clock. It was just awful.
Wow.
I've never had a bad boss.
You are a lucky motherfucker.
Honestly, maybe one, but most of my bosses were awesome. And when I was in high school and working at 7-Eleven, I worked for this dude, Joe, who was absolutely amazing. Like, he lived in my friend's neighborhood, and I'd see him every Saturday. Big old black toupee on his head and his pale, white, pasty skin under the Texas sun, pushing his lawnmower with, you know, like really short shorts on and a wife beater and socks pulled up to his knees with the little, what are those garter belts that you wear for socks? Yeah. And he hired everyone in my band in high school, and we worked the same shift. And all we did was like take turns taking naps in the back and stealing beers from the cooler.
Whipped cream did that 7-Eleven go through?
Not a lot of whipped cream, but quite a bit of malt liquor.
The cooler? Huff that?
What, because of the whippets?
Whippets?
Whippets is no.
If you worked in a grocery store dairy cooler, everyone ran back there to do a whippet. You'd see like a courtesy
really?
Clerk, and that's the euphemism for a bagger. And they would,
I'm a courtesy clerk.
They would run back there, just like boom. They'd just grab one, like, you know, the big extra tall can, rip that thing, and then sit there like on the empty milk crates, like, bleh, 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 bleh. And then you'd call them up. You just like mess them, get on the intercom and call them. "We need order out, please. Eli, order out on check stand 4. And then they'd run back up.
Wow.
I worked at TCBY for a week. That was fun.
What does that mean?
It's like today's best yogurt or the country's best yogurt.
Frozen yogurt.
Yeah. Right? Oh, man. I was awful at the job. I could, like, you know, I had to make this, like, you know, little thing so perfect. I was like, I didn't do shit. I started giving away everything to my friends, and they said, "You don't really make that much money when you're here." I'm like, "Nope. Sorry."
This place was called the country's best yogurt.
Yeah, TCBY.
You didn't have that around?
Country's best yogurt? I worked there
for
a week.
That's like the most arrogant fucking name I've ever heard. how do you know?
Yeah. Maybe that's why they kept it an acronym, you know?
I guess so.
You had to be in the know to realize.
I worked there for 1 week. That was pretty bad. And I was awful at the job.
Frozen, a little more humility.
Old school. That stuff's extinct now.
Frozen yogurt?
Is it?
Who's ever?
It's not actually.
Now hanging out with college girls.
No, but now you've got like Cold Stone, and you've got like gelato places and stuff.
Cold Stone, I can't stand.
Let's just go get frozen yogurt.
I would like Cold Stone if they reduce the portions by like 90%. Cold Stone portions are like for bovine America.
Yeah. You know? Well, you don't have to eat it yourself. You go and you take a woman and you
share. I got a small, and the small could like feed a family of five.
It is ridiculous.
Here's your ice cream, fatso.
What about that thing in L.A.? There's a really like popular frozen yogurt restaurant called, was it Pinkberry?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have people lining out the door to get two different flavors, and all it is like yogurt or green tea or something.
It's called Pinkberry?
Pinkberry.
Yeah, he's right.
Suspecting male could go to a store.
But it's really trendy. They're opening something like that in Berkeley.
The pinker the berry, the sweeter the juice.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Even that alone. Let me tell one bossing. We haven't even gotten to any remote remotely near games yet, but I just want to tell one boss thing because it just you reminded me of it. I had this one boss at my first publishing job in Alameda, California. It was a computer book publishing place, and I'm not going to name any names because they're kind of still around. But the boss of the whole place was this draconian motherfucker. He was just a complete asshole. But my boss, who was under him, was this complete milquetoast, spineless. He was like right out of a cartoon. He was like a cartoon middle manager. Like he just would do what he could never tell anything, have us do anything that he wanted us to do because we had no respect for him. But he would always try to come down on us because his boss would tell him to come down on us. So, like, we would all wander into work, like, anywhere from 9:30 to 10:30, whatever, you know, kind of like we do here. And the big boss would get all, like, you know, Wick, he was a European dude. He's like, you know, work starts at 9 o'clock. And when I say 9 o'clock, I'm doing a variety of accents here because I don't want to give it away who the guy is in case he's listening. Actually, if you are listening, fuck
call him out. I sang about Steve-O for you.
Yeah, that's
you can't
true.
Tell me this fool's name.
No, I don't want to say his name. You know, he's like, they must be at their desk at 9 o'clock. That doesn't mean that they're at the coffee machine at 9 o'clock. They have to be at their desk working at 9 o'clock. So he tells us to my boss, to our boss. And so for one day, our boss goes out. His way of dealing with this is he goes out to the front of the building with a yellow legal notepad. And as we're all coming in, like 45 minutes late, he's got our names. He's written down our names on this yellow pad. And we walk by and he goes, you're late. and I walked in with like two other guys and we're like, yeah, we know. Like that was our answer to him. And that was it. And then we never heard of it again.
Yeah,
I like went to him later on that day. I was like, what was that about? What was this like your late thing? It's like, well, you guys are supposed to be here at 9 o'clock. You're supposed to be at your desk, you know, not at the coffee machine at 9. So I was just like letting you know that that's where you had to be. And so that's what I did. Like, okay, well, that's great. Anyway, see you tomorrow at 10, Brett.
Douchebag.
But the story I wanted to tell about him was that the big boss got it in his head that people were spending too much time at work on the phone, not, you know, non-work calls. And it was pissing him off, all the wasted time because of people making phone calls. So he wanted all the managers to crack down on people talking on the telephone. So this was pre-internet, so God knows what this guy's thinking now, with everybody fucking off on the web all day. But he could not deal with people talking on the phone. So my manager gets the new phone bill.
How old were you at this time?
I was 25.
Okay.
Okay, so my manager gets the new phone bill that has all of the extensions you know, history for the last 30 days, like who's been on the phone. And there's one number on there that's way the hell out of the league of all the others, like constantly on the phone. And I'm sitting there in his office with him, and he's like going over this thing going like, I can't believe it. I can't believe this one person's just on the phone all the time. You know, who is this? What are they doing not working all the time? I'm going to call him. So he picks up his phone. He dials a number and goes, busy, it figures. And he hangs up. He was calling himself. It's his fucking number.
Nice.
Oh my God.
The phone at work, I asked your age because when you're working and you're between like 16 and, God, I don't know what, 20 or something in your job, there's always that, you know, when you're in your first relationships and you can't get the girl off your mind or vice versa or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like you've got to sneak back into that one room where there's a phone and call. See, how you doing? How you doing?
Thank you.
So there's always that. But I was going to say, Rob, you've never had a bad boss. When I work blue collar jobs, I don't think I've ever had a good one. And I know that was a feeling that was unanimous with everyone I work with because they'd sit there all day in most cases. You know, another grocery store I worked at called Hagen, this guy would sit there. And we worked a shift from 2 a.m. to like 11 a.m. And all night, he would just be pointing out all the cricketeers and cranksters that were coming through. And that's where he's the guy. He gave me the expression cricketeer for, you know, another word for a meth addict. And cranksters, the same thing, chicken heads. And he was the one who also...
Chicken head has other meanings.
That has multiple business. Yeah. Chicken heads, boo-boo heads. But he so he would just spend the whole night talking about like what harm he was going to do to the store in this fantasy land. So don't get scared. It's not, you know, like some kind of shit you're going to see on the news the next night, but it would be in these ideal scenarios where no one's in the store, so no one's going to get hurt or anything. But then given that, the sky was the limit. So in one concoction, he would come right through the wall into the produce section where we worked in a, with the bulldozer and just drive straight through right across the store and out the pharmacy and then do a 90-degree turn and come in through the aisles and then go straight out the meat department. And he would have, like, the exact route. Like, it was a like he was a NASCAR driver talking about, like, the line he was going to race when, you know, when he goes back to the track the next day.
Hang a left at the eggplant. Yeah, dude,
so he would just sit there and that, and everything was fool, like, huh, fool, huh. Like,
is that where you got that from?
That's where I got it from.
So huh, fool, like, huh, huh.
Fool, you got to put more cucumber out, fool, huh, fool. Like, you get your attention. But so he was always getting in trouble for that because he'd say it to someone and they'd get mad, like, stop calling me fool. And he'd be like, calm down, fool. I call everyone fool, fool. Like, but he couldn't help it. He really couldn't. He could not help it.
Tourette's. Mm-hmm.
So, hey, I'll bring it back to games.
Yeah, bring it back to games, Sean.
Whoever can segue from that into games gets a prize.
I'm not even going to bother with a smooth transition. I'm just going to change topics. But we've been getting, you know, we have subscriptions to all the various magazines, game magazines. And so this is a time of year, of course, when you get holiday buyer's guides. Uh-huh. And they're ubiquitous. You'll find them in
where it tells you if you like first-person shooters, you should buy Halo 3.
Right.
Right, like EGM.
Yeah, so exactly.
Looking through these, you know, just sort of like, you know, comparing them, reading, you know, looking at one to another, I couldn't help myself. This is one of those times where I wanted to come and cast some stones.
Have we seen some cross? We've got three. You've got
they're
three
all
open
the
in
same
front of
stuff.
You. It is the same stuff.
And here's
okay,
the
so
here's the reason.
That was
for
my
that.
Question.
So yeah. I'm gonna have to give away some of the inside, you know, industry dirt in order to make this work. But basically, for months in advance of your holiday issue, all you know companies that sell anything from sports jerseys to action figures begin, you know, spamming you with email saying,
which is
hey,
their job, which is
right,
their
and
job.
That's their job. There's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, hey, we'll send you this. Keep us in mind for the holiday for your holiday buyer's guide. And what happens is, and they do their jobs. Some of them obviously do their jobs well. When you see the same, you know, useless item in six different magazines all at the same time with, yeah, with nearly identical write-ups. So what happens, though,
and this,
maybe
they're not just useless. They're, like, beyond useless. I mean, these things are complete
junk. They are shit, yeah, and it's overpriced shit. It's the kind of stuff that, you know, the seasonal aisle at any drugstore, and you walk through it, and the whole aisle is, like, gibbering and, like, blabbering at you. Like, happy new year. Like, that kind of crap. And then as you proceed down that aisle, there's just, like, nose clippers, right? And it's like a great gift, a great stocking stuffer. It's like, no, it's not.
Right.
That's and a fucking
and these
horrible
are that,
stocking
and these
stuffer.
Are that with like geek subculture attached to it. So they're
and
like
any,
Batman nose
any
clippers.
Excuse that you could possibly find to put it in your magazine. Now, what happens, though, in the worst case scenario, a magazine staff will say, this is a lot of free shit. And free shit's good shit. So what we can do is just say yes to all these things. And they'll send it all in. And then, you know, what happens is then, I'm imagining, though, that it all gets put in a pile and everyone says, I get this. And then the conditions are, yeah, you could take that if you want. You just got to write 10 words about it. And in some cases in these guides, I mean, it's ridiculous to the extent that there are just pictures. Like, Robert, can I borrow this one from you?
Yeah, sorry.
I'm not going to say
I'm
that.
I'm mesmerized by art guitar.
Robert's making his list here.
I won't name the sources of any of these. But so for this, for example, this one, you look and you see, you know, like 12 games. And you see the name of the game and you see the price of the game. But you see nothing else. That is literally all there is. So here's a page with some games. It's like, come on, dude. Best Buy gives me more information than this.
Yeah, that actually
in
looks
a brochure.
Like,
that
in a
does
store.
Look like a.
It looks like an ad for like a Best Buy.
Right. Yeah. Robert and I both freelanced. We did a Best Buy buyer's guide before I worked at CGW, before it became GFW. Mm-hmm. And we provided better advice with our like 10-word blurbs for each of these than anyone even bothers here. So it's like, look, we got SmackDown versus Raw. And on the same page, then there's, you know, what, Siphon Filter,
but then look,
Logan
there's a
Shadow?
PS3 version, too. Don't forget the PS3 version.
Oh, okay.
Right across from the
right
PS2
from
version.
It. Nice. So yes. that's That is bad because it's absolutely useless. So is
There's no editorial.
And is there someone in the world who sees this? And that at least is a game. You're like, okay, maybe this is their field of expertise. But say you see a picture of a USB cannon, and you're like, dude, there's a picture of that in a magazine. Of course I'm buying it. Yeah. It was in a magazine.
Can I theorize
even
here?
Even the fact that in that one thing with not even 10 words there, like, that is your job. Right, I mean, come on.
Let's look
say
at
what the fucking
let's
game's
look
about.
At when there's words. Here's an example: Jinx shirts. We know because they send a box to us unsolicited.
Yep. Uh huh.
And we,
by the way,
I think we threw them away.
No, we didn't. Well, we give them away. We always give away.
We shirts. Give them like the IT people and stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
but right. So the text in this
IT
case,
IT people and homeless people
for Jinx shirts is that Jinx offers a huge variety of T-shirts, sweaters, and hats for men, women, and children.
Yeah. Okay. So they did,
which is
write
like
that.
Saying McDonald's offers calories.
Wait. You read the mean? Other. Read the other one from the one you showed me earlier. From the other blur.
Now that one right there clearly was a copy and paste from a press release.
Right.
Now here's when you give it more words. Say you're going to give something. The other thing about this too, which this specific item will allow me to address, is the pricing. These are things that they're so out of touch with. For one, who do they imagine? You have to imagine if you're going to make one of these, and this is the reason why we don't make these. JFW's never made one, is because you need to identify who's your audience, right? Is it a buyer's guide for people to give to other people?
Right.
This is what I want. Is
right.
it to help them decide what to buy for someone else? But everything
right.
is so exorbitantly priced, and not so it's a perfect combination of uselessness
right.
and overpricing. So here we have Mitchell and Ness throwback jerseys for $300. And what I'm looking at here is a picture of a shirt with a number on it, okay? And for this, we get pioneers in sportswear fashion. Mitchell & Ness has been around for over a century, providing quality stitching made from superior materials. It's no wonder that the company is so widely respected.
Oh, my fucking God.
We especially
say that, does it?
I don't know what's worse, not saying anything
I
or
know,
saying
maybe
that.
Just don't say anything.
So stitching, like now you
stitching.
Review video games and now you're a fucking connoisseur
right.
in like stitching?
Well, gamers, like, what is stitching?
It's
we
been
don't
around.
Even know what that is.
Like hepatitis has been around for millennia. That doesn't mean it's good, you know? I mean, these guys have been making this shit for over 50 years. And then, okay, we especially like the selection of licensed NBA, NHL, NFL, and MLB throwback jerseys. You'll be able to feel what we're talking about when you try one of these on for yourself.
Wow. Okay, that's awful.
Well, so, you know, I don't think, but I wonder, is it really about, you know, getting a bunch of free stuff, or is it, you
hell
know,
yes,
after,
it
hold
is.
On, or is it after the holiday rush, and they're staring down the however many pages of
exactly.
crap that they need
that.
To fill up,
both.
And it's November,
right.
and they're going
to
go
we
home
got eight
for Thanksgiving,
pages to fill.
And they're like,
holiday buyer's guide.
Throwback jerseys looking like some good stuff to write about
right.
this month.
But you know what, I don't know, about you guys, but when I come to having extra pages, I want to give a reader something actually they give a shit about, or...
We'd
rather give them a couple extra.
That's why EGM's different than GFW.
I just don't.
Because we don't give a fuck.
No, that mentality. You
I'm
know,
kidding.
Because, Brian,
oh my
you
God.
And I are both section editors, so we know that every month you're faced with, you know.
You're limited. Every, no matter what, you always don't have the many pages as you want.
But you also say, I need something to fill these pages. And this is ready made
well,
content.
Well, Sean, yeah. your
just
point
take,
earlier.
Tell your artist, hey, here, I got a bunch of JPEGs. Could you put them on this page? Here's some price tags.
Right.
You know?
Sean,
like,
is there a freaking iPhone or whatever that shit is? Like, no shit, an iPhone's fucking popular
well, right.
this holiday.
I know. That's
king
the
of
lowest
the,
possible.
Yeah, it's a king
for,
of the obvious. I mean,
yeah.
Hey, wait, what's an iPhone?
Also, I think Sean, one of your earlier points is absolutely dead on, which is like, who are these for? This is always my problem with doing these. In fact, even if it's game related, even if it's games, to do a buyer's guide, because I sort of feel like, you know, who is read? I mean, this is just obvious, but who's reading a gaming magazine other than a hardcore gamer?
Yeah.
So why are you writing an article in which, like, you know, for the sports gamer in your life? I mean, really, that's you,
yeah.
right? I mean, you're the one reading the magazine. We should probably just be writing these articles for you.
Yeah.
You know, not for some mythical person that's reading this magazine that's actually shopping for someone else. Who
you
does
know,
that?
Someone that likes sports, they're going to like this shirt with the number on it.
Yeah.
I think, though, it's both. They want it. It's an easy way to fill the page, and people want the free shit. I'd say evidence for people wanting the free stuff is when you see... Look at the prices on here. We have a Lego Millennium Falcon for $500. We have a HeroClix Action Scarab for $250. This, mind you, I've been told, is not even available to the public any longer. But the thing about this is, I mean, look at it. It's about, you know, what, $2.50 worth of materials and 18 cents for labor. And you have this thing here. And no one wants it. No one. It shouldn't have been made. It should have been built with a trash can around it. You know, I mean, it's just like
that's his carrying case as a garbage can.
Eliminate the middleman of the purchase.
Oh. Yeah. Or this Star Wars Echoes hoodies, $100. The weather's getting cold again, and it's time to start wearing some warmer clothes. I mean, Jeff did a better job selling a fucking hammer than this.
You're right.
You got some nails, but it's
Can you point out that that hoodie...
Don't put down my salesman job.
Can you point out that that...
I was awesome at that.
Can you point out that that hoodie is Boba Fett
The hoodie is style? Boba Fett, yeah.
Because that's how I want to look when it gets cold outside.
What do you mean,
cold outside?
You
put the hood up, and you look like Boba Fett. I mean, besides the fact that you're 300 pounds.
Sure, so that is cool.
Steve-O would love to wear
look
that.
Since sci-fi fans are generally known for their fashion sense, Mark Echo is here to help. Help you what? Get punched in the fucking face? So here's another example of what I'm convinced is the absolute insincerity of these recommendations. And we have the EverQuest 2.
I don't think anyone's going to argue that they're sincere, though. You're fighting.
But why is every magazine in existence doing it then?
EGM does a holiday buyer's guide, but we do it very differently. Know. We do it very differently than these guys do.
Oh, here's the iPod. You're right.
I was just going to say every magazine does it because every magazine does it, man. The holidays right, are a time of tradition. not just in what you put up in your living room, not just in the game magazines, but all magazines and publications turn out these lame like holiday things that they do every fucking year because people get lazy right about November and they start just, you know, okay, what are we doing this year to fill some pages? Seriously, look at Time Magazine. I guarantee.
But I'll tell you one thing. That saddens me that people are doing holiday guides just because they have these pages filled and they're lazy. Like, there's so many, like, I don't know. Maybe just me. I feel like there's so many more opportunities for so many things that you want to do.
Of course there are.
But it's like, Jesus Christ, man. Brian, go do something. Go do something else. Like, you know,
tell me
know.
if that argument holds up against this. The EverQuest 2 comic book creator. And the reason I want to sing
that's available now?
Okay, it's $30.
We got Brian's gift.
It's $30, right?
Wow.
Now, these things
that's right, my
come unsolicited in our mailboxes more often than like credit card offers, right? We get these, I swear, there's a stack of these things that have been in the bozo bin to send to, you know, unsuspecting freelancers or whatever in lieu of actual payment.
We actually usually send them out as...
Damn it, I've been wondering when I'm going to get my check. I just keep on getting EverQuest comic book creator. Yeah.
So, look, it's 2007, right? With that in mind, someone's like, dude, for $30, I can press print screen on fucking EverQuest? Yes, dude, I want
Wait,
that
Wait, what
shit.
Is it? I don't understand.
Look at, let's see. Ever go on a really amazing quest and wish you could share your epic story with the world in comic book form? Now you can! And since you can import your screenshots, nothing's stopping you from making this into the World of Warcraft comic book creator.
Oh, God. Oh, dear.
So, I mean... That one really hurt my brain because
that one hurt right. That's a bit of an insider thing because you're right. That's one of those like suspect things that does show up as spam in our mailbox with the Viagras and the lower your mortgage payments. Like,
I got an email today for a dual toilet so I can take a shit next to my wife. I'm all excited about that.
Really?
The guy.
Yeah.
Who would want to do that?
You know, remember the old Saturday Night Live skit where they had the dual toilet like the. That's where they got.
Wait, really? Was that a gag gift or what?
No, it was a real email.
Who the fuck would want to do that?
I don't
Jeff,
know.
Some people want to share all intimate.
And apparently, it's good for the environment. If that was what their thing. It's good for the planet.
That's not right, man.
If some people are, you know, closer to their wives than you.
I'm very close to my wife, and my wife is French, and you know. It took me a while to get used to, even just when we were going out before we were married, that I would be in the bathroom, you know, and I'm just peeing, you know, there's nothing that serious going on. And she just like walk in and I'm like, hey, excuse me. But because she's like in Europe, they're just like, you know, what's your problem? I've seen that before and I've seen what you're doing before. So no big deal.
On the street.
Oh, shit.
Yes. Yeah. They have no hangups that way.
That just brought a story.
You want to hear the story? Yeah. Wait, I'll let you tell a story, but let me
it's about
interject.
Getting someone watching me pee, Jeff.
Okay, but then can we get back
Please
to the buyer's
tell
guide
us
stuff?
About okay. someone watching you pee.
Pee, dude.
Okay, go for it.
You ever seen, you know, Buffalo 66?
No, I know what it is. Okay.
Christina Ricci,
that movie,
right?
With, what's his face?
We could divert. That's like an extra off-topic inside of the off-topic, but that's another great movie, and I love it. But the whole thing starts off, and it's very Kubrickian in that it's very much about someone trying to control their world and minimize, you know, exigencies and stuff, but having no ability to do it. So the guy starts off, and it's all embodied in the fact that he has to take a leak. He just got out of jail, right, where his whole world's controlled. Then he has to take a leak. And the one thing that he could choose to do, he can't do. He goes into restaurants, and they're like, you have to be a diner here. Get out. And he finally goes, and it just builds up so that 30 minutes in, you're like, God damn, I just want him to take a leak. I feel for him. And then when he finally goes, someone's checking his unit out. And then it fucks him up, and he can't leak.
Oh,
he, like,
man.
Zips up and punches the guy or something and runs out. But anyway, I was on the BART, and I think – which is the Bay Area Rapid Transit. I'm going to name check it. And there's this dude looking at me. And I was, you know, in my mind, I was like, what's this dude want? Like, this guy has got some trouble with me or something. And I was thinking, like, it's like a challenging stare, right? So I would look back at him now and then, like, fucking mind your own business, you know? And that went on for a while. And then I thought, I stopped noticing him and I thought nothing of it. And then, you know, I get off at my stop and I go to use the bathroom at the BART at the North Berthoud.
So this was pre 9/11.
No, this was after.
Really?
This was when
I guess they've
here.
Opened
this
them
was
up
just
again.
Like last year.
The restrooms were closed for a long time.
They're open again.
Okay.
And so.
Thank God.
I'm starting to go in, and it's a single use crapper, you know? Like, you go in there, and there's just like a crapper. And so I'm going in, and I turn around, and I hear the door, and like a hand reaches in and stops it. And I look, and it's the same dude from the train. And at that point, like, I was already had my pants down. And I was like, what are you doing, dude?
You were reading the signals.
And then he was like, yeah, he was like still coming in. I was like, get the fuck out, man. And then he like went. And then I came out and looked. It's like, dude.
And it was Larry Craig.
Was it just some thing where this guy had to go real bad and didn't know that it was a unit joint? And I looked and he was getting back down to go on the train again. It wasn't even his stop. But that was...
You read the signals. You thought he was giving you a glare.
I read him wrong. Yeah,
he was checking you out.
He tapped you with his foot. So he signaled
with
his hand.
Yeah, you did the signal back with the fingers.
I didn't mean to be a dick to him if I said the wrong signal, but it was like weird because it's like, don't come in here, man.
So not only are you a bully, you're a tease.
No.
Man, Sean Elliott is such a cock tease.
When we use that word, we mean in the chicken sense, just so we don't get censored by anyone.
So, okay, now go back. Let's talk about the
I just want to get the I noticed in one of these magazines here, it was one of those t-shirts. It was it said K Thanks Buy on it.
Here you go. Let's find you this.
You know, you could find any old internet meme and there's going to be a shirt of it, but it just when I see this shirt, it reminds me that of this weekend when I was hanging out with my daughter and we were talking about music, which I do a lot with her. Because I've got, like, hundreds and hundreds of CDs, and I've been a musician for a long time, and music is a very important part of my life. And it is just killing me. It's just killing me right now. I'm laughing because these guys pointed a shirt out to me that says, "Don't tease unless you can please."
So we know Sean.
We know we're buying. We know we're buying Sean. I get EverQuest 2, you get that T-shirt. So
you need to wear that on BART every day. I think that's a cell phone. It's a cell phone wallpaper.
Okay, so it's killing me right now that because my daughter's 13, none of the music I like can possibly be cool to her, and. If it's something that she likes and I acknowledge I like it too, it's over for her. So the latest.
Why don't you do that to make her have good music taste? Every time she puts in like La Vida Loca or something, just go around the house singing it.
Yeah, I could do that. I can't. I'm not allowed to sing in my house.
I mean, she sings that Milkshake song. You're like, oh, that is the best song I've ever heard.
She was playing something by Spoon, you know, indie band Spoon. And I said, oh, I really like Spoon. And it pissed her off because now Spoon's uncool. And I said, what? They're cool. And what she said back to me was, they're not cool once you know who they are, Dad. Made me think about, like, when a print magazine is telling you to buy a shirt that says K-Thanks, buy on it.
Oh, it's officially
over. That means the meme is now over. By the time you order this shirt, this thing is, you know, first of all, by the time it's even on a shirt, it's over. But then by the time a print magazine recognizes it's on a shirt, it's way over.
I'm very much in agreement with Malcolm Gladwell on that. He's a journalist, and he wrote Blink, and what's the other one that I'm thinking? Tipping Point, but in which he examines, you know, the life cycles of trends, and he posits that there's these different, you know, different people associated with different parts of the life cycle. You know, those that introduce it, early adopters, middle adopters, and stuff. But by the time you get to the magazine that is trying to sell it to you, you've gotten to past even the majority adopters, and that's exactly when something is no longer cool. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like just a sociological way of saying the same thing. But yeah, I agree with it.
It's like your dad telling you he likes Spoon.
For the Wayne, Lolcats, all that stuff, I mean, it's way, way past past the majority adopters phase. Very uncool.
Lolcats.
Yeah. All.
Which is funny because I just had my 12-year-old niece send me an email saying, "Have you seen these lolcats? They're so funny, lol."
See, so, I'm expecting to get one from my dad any day now.
Then they could come back eventually with irony, you know? Like, right, there was the arguing on the Special Olympics, arguing on the internet's like winning or competing in the Special Olympics. How can I even get this wrong? There was a JPEG that you post up and it would show a person with Down syndrome breaking the barrier in a relay race or something. And it became the dumbest thing ever, to the point where to even introduce it into a message board argument made you lose instantly, you know. But then I was able to bring it back in the form of, you know, an Ideal Poster's mouth. That was my alt account where people were making fun of him. And I brought it back and I was like, I tried to, because honor is this thing, you know. It's like, I tried to, you know, kick it with composure. I fucked Demi Moore in Disclosure. No, he was like, you know, I was trying to keep my cool here, and you guys have forced this on me. You forced me to do this and bring out the big guns. And then I tasted that thing. And it was like, I thought that was a legitimate. I'm making excuses for myself, but that
you
was
made a legitimate funny.
That was a good way to use it.
Yeah. I don't know. At any given moment, I think that something is cool and uncool. Cool and uncool aren't very different anymore. Could be cool today, uncool tomorrow, whatever. I mean, are the Bee Gees cool today? Are they uncool? Who knows?
Very true. Yeah. I think the Bee Gees were always cool.
I think pretty much.
Except for that whole time when we thought they weren't cool. But they were
the Sgt.
Cool.
Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band movie featuring the Bee Gees is pretty terrible.
Uh-huh, but it might be cool now, though.
That's true.
In an ironic way.
Yeah. Fact.
Did anyone actually see that movie other than me at the theater?
Ooh. No, I was gestating.
You were excited at that time.
I was still making my parents' lives hell.
What's freaking to me now is, never mind. Screw that point. Let's move on. Yeah. Final, I was going to go off onto a 70s rant. Never mind.
The final rant about the buyer's guides is that when you'll see these big ticket items, and there will be a single one, and even if it's remotely related, like, say, a high-definition television, there's just one. And if you wonder, if you're a reader and you're wondering, hey, maybe they've done all the hard work for me, and they've compared them all, and then this is the one I need to buy. Actually, no. This is the one that someone sent them.
Yeah.
And that they're writing about because someone sent them.
Right.
The final thing... the psychology of it is very similar to Christmas, you know? I mean, grandma gives you something, and the very least you got to do is to hold it up and show everyone. So that's what happens when you see a picture and just the price tag. That's you holding up grandma's pajamas.
Thanks,
or whatever.
Grandma.
And then sometimes you got to, like, say something obligatory about it, and that's when you comment on the quality of the stitching. And that's that.
Yes.
Anyway, look for GFW's buyer's guide. Next issue when we run out of shit to write about.
Yes.
But we'll have tested all those products. What else we got to talk about, Sean? We have any actually gaming talk this week?
We got Brian here, and so we got Robert Bobito. They're both as much console gamers as PC gamers.
And I'm definitely more console guy for sure.
I sat in one Brian's of yours with Brian Indahari. Not really a PC gamer, I think it's safe to say.
Right. No, I can't make the commitment. I just don't have the money to buy a new rig. That's
You're one foot in the door because you know.
Oh, I'm a believer. Orange Box has made open my eyes to many things, as Jeff can.
He did touch about Orange Box on.
I think it's the greatest. I think it's game of the year.
But if you're playing Team Fortress, you're playing it on Xbox Live.
Yeah, which is sad because I know you guys. It's a whole different community and play. I mean, that's where it's really at for Team Fortress 2, because it's just so kind of broken right now on 360, because there's so much lag and definitely not enough players. It's kind of sad. What bothers me, I understand Halo 3 is great multiplayer. I understand that it's a great game, and I understand Call of Duty 4 has, you know, a certain following, which I don't understand why for multiplayer. But Team Fortress 2 is so good. So good, and introduces so many new things to console multiplayer experience. I just don't understand why people aren't trying it. Like, I'm just really shocked when I go online and I see there's not enough games. It's hard to fill a game with the amount of people. Where I imagine on the PC game, you're just like fighting to get in an open game.
I think it just doesn't have the, you know, it doesn't have that history. You know, it just doesn't have the built-in community the way the way the Valve games do on the PC.
Yeah, I mean,
I think they probably could have done a better job of explaining it to the console audience, like what it's all about. Because you'd get, even though it's a really intuitive game, and it's not like each class is full of tons of stuff that you have to learn. I mean, the spy is complex, but I mean, they don't really introduce you to the idea that you're a part of this team. You pick a class because it does something specific. You need to learn your part and play your part. They don't really explain that to you, and so people get in there and just start deathmatching.
Well, that's the problem is that people, console gamers are so used to, oh, let's go kill everybody. They don't do well with, like, okay, I'm going to play a role, like, you know, a medic. Like, can you imagine people want to play a medic in a console game? Like, they're not going
to
want to do that.
If you go back 9 years ago, though, to when Team Fortress, and even longer, when the first Quake Team Fortress mod came out, PC gamers were very much used to nothing but deathmatch and some CTF. And yet, when the mod came out and other, you know, mods like, you know, Science and Industry is a classic complicated Half-Life 1 mod where you'd actually, your team would research various technology that would allow you to get access to weapons and stuff like that. When you would look at Natural Selection, an asymmetrical game mod, you know, where you're one side's aliens, one side's humans, and the aliens are not like brutes, you know, where they're not humans with guns. They're like creepy crawlies and stuff. And all those games were just released without tutorials, mm-hmm. without anything. And they somehow managed, I mean, because I don't know. I can't argue that because they were more hardcore somehow than the person who plays Halo for 30 hours a week. You know, I mean, so that's an interesting difference. Those games came and proliferated without any introduction or any explanation of what the fuck was going on.
That's true, yeah.
The difference to me is, what else do you do on a PC? You write term papers. What else do you do on a television? You watch The Flavor of Love.
what about when a shot with tequila?
It's that simple, you know?
You've reduced it quite a bit there,
you know, you're sitting on a PC and you're engaged in something that might, take a little more effort, might take a little more concentration.
You could also be using your PC to either to play solitaire or look at porn, and you could be watching.
Yeah, exactly.
And you could be watching, you know, 26-hour, Roman history marathons on History Channel.
So don't simplify, mister.
Yeah.
But I think there are differences in the communities. And another thing that
That's what drives me nuts.
This week, though, Brian, is the hate speech on Xbox Live. I'm not saying that, you know, PC gaming is free from, you know, hate speech and
Good
stuff
God,
like that.
It is not.
But if you look at the video, and of course it's stacked because it's a compilation of it.
Right.
True to my experience, I've spent plenty of time on Xbox Live and plenty of time online with PC games. It's much more common, in my experience at least, on Xbox Live.
There is no doubt that the reason, I mean, like, I will not play games with strangers anymore online. I just don't. I just won't. I mean, if I play Halo 3, I'll play with the guys here. If I play Madden, I'll play with, like, Luke Smith. Only person I'll play. I only play friends. Drives me nuts how immature online gaming is. It's an immature world.
What's your take? As Robert, since in your recent time with Xbox Live.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think you put a microphone in front of somebody, and the first thing they're going to say is, fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck. Fuck. shit, fuck. You know, like, there's just
caveman's
like
caveman's first words.
Yeah, it's like it's like once they realize that they can intrude upon your experience in some way, you know, it just becomes like part of the aggression of playing an online game for some people.
And then they get pro tips on how to do it from Sean Elliott. I mean, it's very different on our podcast.
You do it with subtlety.
Well, it's not necessarily with subtlety. There's something different. Like, I mean, people, I have heard compare what I do to bullying. And, you know, I was trying to defend it and say, no, bullying is not what I do. Bullying would be the equivalent of when you take someone and you're like, dude, why is your dick so small? Why is your dick so small? Push him a few times. No, why is your dick so small, dude? You know, and you start doing something like that. You know, you pick on someone and you're specifically exploiting some insecurity they have, some difference or something like that. Whereas, I mean, you know, some people think it's indefensible. In my mind, it's the difference between that and, say, discovering that when my helicopter is loaded with teammates and I ram it into a friendly tank, the team kills are counted against the tank driver rather than me, the helicopter pilot, and we can all punish him, which gets him kicked immediately from the server. that's like both me experimenting with the way that the game is designed. It's also having fun, but it's any.
I love these rational.
It's not like saying, like, let's get this dude because I think he might be gay. Let's get him out of this server. It's like, hey, here's a random dude driving a tank. This is funny because he's just driving a tank. And it's not the same for me. I constantly say this. Hey, if someone's walking by the street and I got a bag of milk and hot dog chunks and I'm like, this will be funny to throw on someone. I don't do that. I don't just throw it on someone who walks by, right? Because I think, you know, getting kicked because the stakes are different. That's literally humiliating, right? It's, I mean, if someone were to throw some shit on you on the street, it's, you know, it's upsetting and there are very real consequences. You got to go clean up and this and that. In the game, I got kicked from a server. Like, you just join again. You go to another one, you know? So it's like, I don't do it all
but so
the
what,
time.
What, I know you, I know you do, and I haven't really talked to you about this, but what is your motivation for the, for this? Because I understand, like, you do go out and like to have "quote unquote" fun with people. What are you really getting out of it besides just kind of pissing people off?
It's fun. It just makes me laugh when it happens. And it, like, I mean,
but don't I mean I, you know I you know how much I love you, but I mean, don't you think you're part of the problem?
I don't think it's the same. I think it could be a part of a problem, but I think it's not the same. Like, say, again, if I'm in a server and I'm doing, you know, like a character or something, a Ralphie character, and now at least Robert and Jeff have heard it, you know it's not the same as these guys that are calling out someone whose name is Gay Boy.
I do agree. It's different.
It is different. Like, yeah, I mean, supercharged terms over and over again, you know?
I agree. But you are, I mean, at the same time, you are still kind of... You're not being as harsh as maybe someone saying gay boy or whatever, but
from my experience listening to Sean now, what it seems to me is more like he's kind of, I mean, on one hand you could say he's being an asshole, but on the other hand, I think actually what he's doing is he's ferreting out the assholes. He sort of throws these things out here, and the real assholes are the ones who respond to him. And then Sean just baits them more. So
that's
he,
the
like,
voice stuff is he, always that.
Right. He's kind of calling out the guys who are likely to call other people retards.
Gotcha. If someone is like, hey, could you be quiet? I'm just trying to play. Then they're no fun to mess with.
Yeah.
It's the guy that immediately starts screaming, dude, you sound like you got a dick in your throat. That's the guy that's exactly the guy that
you're
go for.
You're looking for the closet
but it's
ass.
Not like, I'm not like the Punisher of video games, you know, like the Vigilante.
I think mostly you're trying to create a surreal experience for other people. I mean, I kind of dig that. You know, something in me would like to go online and play a game and run into some kid who keeps on talking about how his grandmother got him a video game so he can make friends and have this like really weird experience, you know, that you never really have. It reminds me of stuff like, you know, you hear about that group in New York who is put it, you know,
Improv Anywhere.
Yeah, Improv Anywhere. They do all these bizarre pranks where, you know, they take turns getting onto New York subway stops pantsless until the car's filled with pantsless people, and then have someone drive a hot dog cart through selling pants.
And it's something that you so the people they go and talk about it all month, and then their life, it's not like
I'm making their life more interesting by doing a retard voice on the internet,
but it's like
I bring magic.
Their time in that game, I mean, ideally it's a little more interesting, and I don't think it's anywhere near unless you're just like prone to be irate at the smallest, you know, provocation. I don't think it's anywhere near the people that are screaming, you know, N-words and all these other things on there.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I was going to say, to take it back to that point, the difference between, I mean, again, this is just, you know, anecdotal. I'm saying in my experience, there seems to be a discrepancy. So people, it would be interesting to see on their message boards, people that listen to our podcast and write responses, see if you notice any difference. And one of the few, you know, explanations that comes to mind for me is that because of the dedicated nature of PC servers, there's almost always an admin or moderator or someone with the ability to, like, kick people. So what happens is if you go into, you know, say a Team Fortress server and you start spouting off that kind of incendiary language, then someone just kicks you immediately.
Yeah.
And then that's right. The end of it. You don't just kind of go on it like the kids in the back of the field behind the Kmart getting away with whatever. You know, there's old dirty porno mag back there and they're blowing off fireworks and stuff. It's not the same.
I'm saying like I know. Yeah, we did that.
I did back there. That was where I saw my first penthouse.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in general, I think gamers could do a better job of vetting the community. You know, I think we could use a little bit of, like, we're cooler than you. You know, gamers should be, you know, we're cool. We're above getting online and, you know, randomly, you know, assaulting people with middle school insults. And
but of course they're not.
I mean,
yeah, well, you know, but I want to be in the club that is too cool for that, you know,
right?
Where is
but
that?
There's, I mean, right, the gaming community is a subset of humanity at large. So yeah. You've got your assholes, you've got your nice people, you know.
And I also think it's the type of game you're playing. I mean, I imagine when you, like Jeff, when you play WoW, it's a very different experience than when you're playing a Team Fortress or,
well,
you know.
It is. I mean, in a game that is not competitive but is actually cooperative, in general, you will find, you know, and MMOs in general tend to attract a, you know, this is not the 13 to 25-year-old male. You know, it's a probably a greater cross-section of humanity, so chances are, you know, you're just not going to get that kind of locker room mentality like mm-hmm. you will more often in a shooter.
Yeah.
But what's interesting to me is this thing, you know, this, it got brought up for a sec at the beginning here, is like, is the Xbox Live community or any console live community less mature than the PC online community? I mean, I sort of am not sure if that's,
I mean, I haven't
correct.
Played enough PC online games to even compare the two. I mean, Sean, you've played a lot. I mean, Robert, I mean, you guys.
Well, Sean, your point about the dedicated servers, I think, is probably true, right?
I think that's probably a major factor in it. I mean,
certainly we've all been in PC games online where we're getting
called
all money. Bag, you know?
Yeah. It's all money, though. I mean, that's the difference. Like, if a PC gaming audience is more mature, it's because the cost of entry is more expensive. You know, you can
get
a kid can afford an Xbox, and a parent is more likely to buy an Xbox than a $2,000 computer.
Yeah, that's true, you know? Actually. Yeah, I mean, my experiences on Xbox Live, most of my online shooter gaming in the console, it comes from Call of Duty 4, so I'm new to it, and I have noticed, you know, on average, you know, my per capita gaming, you know, versus like lousy experiences with other players, you know, is very, very high.
Yeah.
In Call of Duty 4. I mean, meaning almost every game, there's dudes calling each other names.
Yeah.
Whereas I've never had that happen in the PC one at all. Period. And I've played to level 55. So.
But they also seem younger too, like you're saying. They seem.
Yeah, yeah. Have you guys? Did you read about them doing in the new dashboard update that they're going to let you look at the friends of your friends?
Yeah.
I think it's, I don't know. I could see Xbox Live going in a more social networking direction and try to let you find more people that you can get along with who aren't your real world friends. Mm-hmm. Where you know you could at least like find the friends of people that you know to be acceptable players mm-hmm. and try to stake out more, you know, a bigger friends list so that you don't have to go out into the sort of wilds of Xbox Live to.
Is that their motivation for doing it?
I don't know.
I think so, but also, I mean, how much can you really learn from a guy who makes up probably a name that you don't even understand or can pronounce and, you know, what games they've played with their achievements? Like, I can understand, you know, you want to see, like, you know, all of the EGM guys, you know, all their friends and who they hang out. Maybe they're hanging out with developers or something like that, but... Yeah, do you even know unless they say this is, you know, such and such from this developer? There's no information about you. Yeah. It's not like a Friendster or a Facebook or something that actually has some meat to it. All you're knowing is what games they played and how many points they have. You're not really learning anything about them. So you don't really, I mean, can you really get that much about their gaming habits or how, you know, are they assholes online or not?
Right.
There's got to be another step to it. Like, it's got to have some type of, like, bigger profile.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be cool to see them join Open Social, but somehow I don't think Microsoft's going to go for that, you know, to just add it to your own social network. But I guess they could continue to add more things where you could get to know people. But
I think that, yeah. I think it's just, you know, seeing
video
friends.
Chat, why don't you use it?
Yeah. Seeing friends of friends, I think, is a step that I understand is more of a social network thing, but I don't think it really tells you much. Like, yeah. If you want to, when the point is to kind of like go out and meet more people that may be fun to play online games with, it's still a crapshoot for
you. You have to know about your friends. You have to know about how readily they accept requests and stuff too. So if there's someone who just clicks yes on every single time they get an invite because they want to be Joe Popular, it's not going to be helpful to you in any way, shape, or form to, you know, look at their friends list.
Yeah, because I know in the beginning I just accepted everybody.
Picky.
Yeah, right. And yeah, my list is full and mostly for
and I have
I
no
know.
Idea who they are.
Right.
Say 70% I don't know who the hell they are.
Right.
I only have people that I know.
Well, I learned my lesson on Xbox Live and now like on Facebook and things. I only take people I know. So actually, if you're listening and you've tried to be my friend, it's not because I don't like you. It's just because, well, maybe I don't like you.
But I just don't know.
I'm just doing that's like my family and friends thing. Do the Xbox Live games have the ability at all to kick a player? Can you do that?
You can. Yeah, and you can get feedback. You can get feedback, and if you get enough,
that doesn't do anything.
I mean, you were about to say
if you get enough. If you get enough, what? Then you can get more.
But if you get enough negative feedback, they will ban you from Xbox Live.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is like, how long does anyone use that function? Because I know people who said that every time
they're playing Halo, every time they play and they lose to another team, they give negative feedback to every person on their team. I mean, I've heard people say things like that. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look who you're dealing with. If someone's going to say the things that they say on there, is that a surprise? Oh, yeah. God forbid they do that. After they called you this, and you know,
So I mean, there is that. I mean, that, wait, we say, is there a system in place? Yes, but is it effective? Yeah. I don't think so. I don't really see any evidence of that.
Your word against theirs. Microsoft can't arbitrate in that. I don't imagine they would.
No, I mean, I think some magazines have done articles like, you know, trying to get kicked off Xbox Live and whether it was successful or not. So. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it comes as no surprise, really, that a bunch of guys who are basically in like complete arrested development, because this is what they're choosing to do with their free time, cannot be mature when playing with others online. But it sure would be nice if they tried. Really kills online gaming.
But no, I mean, it just really annoys me. Like, I'm going out, I just want to play a couple rounds of some, you know, Team Fortress or Halo or Call of Duty. And it's like, 75% of the time, I never even put my mic on.
I swear, it seems like every match I played of Call of Duty 4, one guy would be threatening the other guy of finding him in real life and kicking his ass.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And the conversation would always be the same. He'd be like, oh, yeah, well, I know how. I'll find you. Oh, I can do it. You believe
That's
it.
That's the best
I'll
thing.
I'll see your IP address.
I'm coming. The very first Ralph debriefing video that I posted was as soon as I got some guy mad, like, he threatened me with that. So then the response was like, well, I'll fuck you up in real life. And then, like, and then if someone's going to respond seriously to that, like, no, dude, I'm going to get you in real life. Like,
yeah.
We should get Ziff to do a one-up feature where we fly two people who have decided they hate each other and want to kill each other to San Francisco and have like talks and possibly a fight, but talks, like peace talks.
Yeah.
So do you think you could play Call of Duty 4 with Rick without getting angry, Matt? What makes you so angry? How's your situation at home?
That would be good.
That would be pretty cool.
Encounter session.
And then, or just invite him to fight. Then we get
even better.
This guy said your mom's so fucking fat, man. You better fucking hit him.
Sponsored by GFW.
On the griefing thing, before we finish that, I did want to say that because I talk about it, you might get the impression that that's all I do when I go on. But, like, that's not the case at all. I mean, that's, like, something that sporadically punctuates, like, very serious play where, like, I'm playing to win or, like, I like to, you know, like, Team Fortress, I like to play, like, a leader role or, I mean, absolutely serious.
That's when people need to come on and grief you.
And you're in super serious mode.
Most of the time you're just, like, sort of spouting obscure, bizarre jokes to Rory on TeamSpeak. Anyway.
Back and forth. There's
not a lot of griefing. And if people heard what you were talking about, they'd probably just think you were fucking crazy.
You tell me if this is griefing. Maybe this is one of the origin stories of it. And right after high school, we're at this party, and it was to watch The Toxic Avenger. I think you know this one. But, and there was some alcohol. Some people were, you know, they were drinking alcohol. Some people were participating in the inhalation of marijuana, of smoke from the marijuana plant. And so they start this movie, and there's this one guy.
We don't condone that here.
No, we don't. I'm saying this was a horrible
thing. But it makes graphics awesome.
And this guy, you know, there's this, one of the people that was there. He was like, it was my friend's house, and his sister was there too. And she had some of her girlfriends, and they invited some guys over too. And this, I got the sense immediately that this guy was absolutely credulous. Like, I could basically write this guy's reality for him by just saying things. So I couldn't help myself. And the movie started, and I told him, you know, I just started casually saying, like, hey, you've seen this before, right? He's like, no, I haven't. And I was like, well, you know, this is the most controversial film ever recorded.
The Toxic Avenger.
I was like, I have books on its creation and on the controversy and some of the, you know, the lawsuits that went down afterward. And basically what this is every act of violence you see in here is real insofar as it's really happening to someone. What they did was they took all these terminal people with terminal illnesses and stuff, and they told their families, you know, and they told them, hey, we'll give you this amount of money. We're going to let you do whatever you want. You know, we'll hook you up in this way, and we'll just shoot you up full of, you know, morphine. And then we're just going to do these scenes.
so unfunny when I'm saying it now for some reason.
Because it's kind of scary.
So the guy was watching.
All freaked out. Wait, now was this guy, he was impaired by the cannabis leaf.
And alcohol as well, okay. Yeah. And I right. believe he might have been impaired naturally without not in a clinical sense, but just.
You just mean because like his
the way
parents
you assess
were first
one person or another. Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'm telling him this, and then the movie's just starting, and he's getting nervous. And so then the first act of violence in the movie, and the movie's ridiculous. This is why I think I was willing to do it. Maybe if it was like Saw or something, which I've never seen, but anything that's like even slightly credible. This is the kind of movie where someone gets their arm ripped off and they just put some ragu, some spaghetti hanging on the side. Right. It's so clearly spaghetti.
Right.
Or they'll do like a quick cut and the person's like head that's exploding turns into like a balloon full of foam or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so the first thing is that there's this kid and they're on a bicycle and the punks are driving around the car and they're like, dude, run him over. That's 20 points. So everyone else that was there, most everyone else was there, had seen the movie before and they're just ready to laugh because it's so completely stupid. It has so many like idiotic lines in it and quotable. And so they hit the kid and it's like clearly it's a dummy. It goes flying over the car and everyone starts laughing. And this guy, I look over at him, it's just kind of like looking, really seriously at it. And then the guy in the car is like, he's still moving. That's not full points. That's not full points. So then he's like, I'll show you full points. And then he's like, backs up and they back up over the kid. And that's when they put like a squash or something under a tire and then they run over. And the kid at that point, like he looked like he was getting ill. And I was like,
he thought he was watching a snuff film.
I know. And I had, and then at that point I was like, man, I'm just joking with you, dude. I'm sorry. So I guess I answered my own question. I was going to
ask you. Yeah, you griefed him.
But I guess it was.
I hope you feel bad now, don't
jerk,
you?
Jerk.
I feel bad about that. Do we need to do a break?
Yeah, we'll do a quick break and we'll be right back with hopefully something a little more socially responsible.
This one-up podcast is brought to you by the Laptop Experts, makers of the Toshiba Satellite X205, a laptop with enough power to destroy a small planet. Visit www.toshiba.com/expert.
We're back! Okay, so the last couple of weeks I've been talking about The Witcher. I've been talking a little bit about the adult-oriented things you could do in that game, probably more than the game itself. And I have been loving the game as a game and not just a way to meet women. But I'm bringing it up here because I have now come to a complete full stop at this game. And I just wanted to rant about it for a moment. I sort of hate to do it because, it's not a quote unquote AAA game. It was nice to see it's been getting lots of great reviews. We gave it a very good review. But I just hit the end of Act One boss. And this is such a fucked up piece of shit battle that I am done playing this game until I find out either that there's a patch for this boss battle or one of the developers comes to my house and beats it for me. Because
you have a third option, hacks.
Or a hack, yeah. And I wanted to bring it up here because I just wanted to ask you guys if you have ever hit that point in the game. Like, basically, I spent the whole weekend, I'm powering through the game, and you need to feel like you're making progress, right? Because we all got a lot of shit to do in our lives. We got a lot of other games to play, and you need forward momentum, or it's not worth it. And I spent the entire weekend on one, what I'm sure when it boils down to it, if I ever do beat it, it's going to be a two-minute encounter. But whatever it is I have to do, I have not done it. And I wasted hours, literally hours this weekend on this one thing. And it's compounded worse. And this is another reason why I want to rant about it, because it's one of those boss battles that comes immediately out of a cutscene. So, and it's a long cutscene, and you can't skip it. So if you die, you get taken to the end screen. You have to reload, and this game already has long load times.
And every
to start
time
with.
You come into the battle, you're hating it. And like when the cutscene's playing, you're just like,
right. And you can't click through it. So I'm sitting there going, okay, yes, I know. And then you're.
Did you start talking to the boss out loud?
Oh, I totally did. Yeah.
Would you tell
him? No, I was like, yes. Yes, fuck you. Yes, fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. My wife's like, are you playing this for fun? Yes, I am.
Oh, man.
Sorry. I yelled into the mic. This is fun. Can't you tell? So, And then, you know, because it's an RPG where the battles can be, you know, there's a certain strategic element to it. You can get yourself sort of powered up with potions and stuff. You can pause the game during battle to switch your stance, to do other things. But the problem is that because it comes right literally out of a cutscene, the cutscene ends, the screen goes black for a second, and when it comes back up, the battle is in progress already. So you don't even get like a minute to prep for it.
Change your items.
Right, to change your items. So like I could drink a potion if I want to, but the dude's already wailing on me.
Can't you quick save that game?
Supposedly you can. You can quick save at that point. I read on a forum that you can. God knows I have not been able to do it. So, yeah, like I'm dead as I'm trying to quick save. I'm already dead. So
I've heard other people complain. You're not alone on that. The people I play Company Heroes with three other people, and a couple of them are twins that like game in the same house. And for a while, one of them was playing Witcher. And while we were trying to play Company Heroes, I heard him just screaming about, I'm sure it's the same thing. You described it earlier to me in the exact same terms.
Yeah, I was
and
on.
He was like, fuck it, I'm getting hacks.
Yeah, it's funny. I went to 2:45, the forums there, to see if anybody had a way around this thing. And so I went to the thread. It's been about The Witcher, and I stayed off of it because I knew there were spoilers. And I was looking through the thread to see if anyone had the same problem. And sure enough, this is the boss battle where everybody's quitting.
Yeah.
And I do feel shitty ragging on it because there's been so many good things about this game. I've really been enjoying it a lot. And it's just mind-boggling to me that the developers would put something like that in and that nobody in QA, that nobody called them on it, you know, that there could be something that just seems – it just seems broken to me.
It's as bad as anything, though. I mean, say if you have like, you know – going to come up with some stupid-ass analogy, but you have, like, a really nice car. It's wonderful in every way, but you know that on the 35th mile, it's going to break down every time. I mean, that means it's a shitty car.
Right.
You're not going to play that game. Everyone's going to get to that same point, and they're not going to enjoy it anymore, and they're not going to finish it.
But, you know, there's people in the thread who said, well, that's a real damn shame because Acts 2 through 4 are awesome.
Yeah.
If you could just get past that part that you're hating.
Well, then just hack it, then. That's a luxury you have as a PC gamer. You don't need to buy a Game Genie.
I actually just got so mad that I threw the disc
I did
away
that with I, Metroid like Prime, and this is one of those things where anytime we're talking about difficulty, there's a billion people out there. The same.
Oh God, yeah.
There's going to be that
Xbox Live dudes that are like,
you suck at video games.
Yeah, you just suck. You fucking suck.
I was waiting for that when I posted on 2:45.
Like, right.
Why don't you learn how to game then?
Yeah. And in Metroid Prime, it was like I think it was Thardos. It was just a big rock monster. And I probably fought him like six times, and he's a big monster made of rocks, and then he turns
that
into a ball.
That goddamn plant thing?
Rolls
that
it
and
over.
You shoot the weak spots.
And you shoot the weak spots. Yeah. And I think after six times, I was like, "That you know what? That's too many. This isn't fun anymore." And then I took it, and I went and I traded it back that same week to the store, you know? Well, and I was like, that's all it took, though. You know, that forward momentum was lost, and I didn't want to mess with it anymore. And the same thing happened with, like, you know, Final Fantasy VII is the one and only Final Fantasy I've beaten. Final Fantasy VIII, IX, and X, I played them all for many hours, at least 20 hours each. But on every instance, I came to a boss that became unbeatable.
I was just going to say, Japanese RPGs are notorious for, like, you'll invest 15, 20 hours. And then you get to, like, that one boss that if you haven't done everything perfect to that point, you're not going to be strong enough to kind of defeat that boss, no matter what type of strategy you use, and it's like game over. And they've gotten a little bit better over the years, but like, because Final Fantasy XII, I reviewed that for EGM, and I was really worried I was going to, like, the 20-hour mark, I was going to be like, oh, well, I can't go anymore. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that bad, because you could kind of go back and kind of power yourself up, but I had to go back and, like, just grind for a while.
And this is what people are telling me to do in The Witcher. They're saying, oh, well, did you level up this one ability that will knock him out?
I think it's just poor game design. That's just poor game design.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I should be able to beat, because I'm pretty much as high level as I feel I could be at this point in the game. I've done every side quest, you know, but the path I've chosen, which is more melee, apparently it's harder to beat the dude.
Well, it's funny. Jen Tsao, she was on the Mass Effect review with me, and we had chosen different classes, and she had done way more side quests than me. And I beat the boss, I think, this final boss, I think it took me a second time. Over 50 times she tried with her character class. I watched her play. She did nothing wrong, and she still couldn't beat it because her character wasn't simply powerful enough. Ugh. That's just terrible game design, if you ask me.
I actually am sitting here thinking as we're having this conversation about, you know, what games that I've quit because of bosses, and I am such an obsessive compulsive freak that I will play, especially if a game has a hard boss, and I'll play it like 10 times. And it's almost like now that I've sunk that time in, there's no turning back.
You have to keep going.
And it's really bad because it's not fun. I mean,
right.
And I've played through a lot of games that were just ridiculously hard that, you know, I just should have given up on, you know, like Beautiful Joe. For
those were tough.
The final boss was tough in that.
The second last boss.
I played
the
final boss in that game like for 4 or 5 hours one day.
I couldn't beat the first boss.
You're talking about the one that
where you go up on
steals your powers. I mean, he has the same.
It turns into this big like fight on Earth. You become like giant, you know, walking robots or something. I don't even remember. You become big, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I'm always. Forcing myself to do that stuff, and when I want to quit, I'll end up quitting a game more when I'm just sick of something that nags at me about.
Oh, yeah. I feel embarrassed to even say this. I solved Cameo for Xbox 360 launch game, and there was this one boss that, no joke, I was up till 5 in the morning. It was the water boss. It took me at least 3 hours to beat, and the mechanics were so broken controlling this part because you had to go underwater, and, you know, not many developers know how to make underwater, like, it was so broken. Mm-hmm. And for 3.5 hours, I have no idea. The game wasn't even that good, and I kept playing just to kind of defeat this boss.
You guys have more patience than me.
I wouldn't do it. Yeah,
that's yeah. Have you guys played?
I mean, if it was for review. If it was review.
It wasn't even for review, well, which was even more embarrassing because I wanted the achievement points.
I think the more interesting thing is, like, what the hell are boss battles about? Like, why do they exist? Why, you know, it's this tradition.
They come from the arcade where they're an opportunity to make money. They're put in the arcade. I mean, of course, it's interesting to see something big on the screen when you knew that was a technical limitation at the time.
Yeah.
But they were very much there because that's when you eat the majority of your quarters. I bet, like, if you looked at the graph, you produced a graph of how many quarters people are putting in each level in the game. The boss is the one where you're like, even if I'm going to get 2 grenades off on this guy and take off, like, 2 health bars from him, it's worth another quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens, I think, is you got that legacy thinking. And it appears in the strangest places, like in BioShock, you know, where you're like, oh, we have to do something. It's also a good way to change the pace of a game where it's constantly going one place and fighting a bunch of other guys to give it the sense of, you know, of drama and climax. But I think they go wrong in more cases.
I don't mind, too, if it feels like it's a fair progression of what you've learned throughout the course of the game, or even up to that section of the game. If this is like the culmination of the skills you've accumulated.
Well, that's what Mario does. That's what Mario does so well.
Just being this unfair thing that bashes you over the fucking head that you're not prepared for.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like a different school of boss battle. There's the one where it's like Sean saying, where it's a quarter eater, where it's just this ridiculously powerful thing that you gotta, you know, punch a million times. Or there's the sort of Zelda or Metroid model where the boss battle is sort of the final exam for that section the game, where it's like, now put all this into play, you know?
Right, and that's where I feel like the Witcher just is not doing that, even if it thinks it is. You know, it's like, okay, I have now played this game for many hours. I've done all the leveling up. You showed me how to do this. You showed me how to do potions, and I can do all this. And now this thing is like 1 or 2 killing me? Coming out of a long cutscene? Fuck you.
Oh, that's another thing. The whole cutscene thing, like, I've sat through many games where it's like you get this hard boss fight, but you're sitting there for 10 minutes listening to a speech. You're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't even be having this rant if there had been, like, 30 frickin' seconds of prep time between the cutscene and the fight. I mean, that to me was just, like, the insult to injury.
For I like Robert's analogy that, you know, a boss is the final exam for a level. Mm-hmm. I think a recent example of something that worked really well was the final level in Half-Life Episode 2.
Yeah.
And that was because, you know...
Don't ruin it for me, please. I haven't got to the end yet.
You haven't got to... This is so bad. Oh, God. Oh. We got to kick you out of here, dude.
I'll still play it.
We're like, we're going to get
around a no-holds-barred
discussion.
Go ahead. Go for it. Just go for it.
I can't, without being specific.
It's not a plot spoiler. It's just a combat spoiler.
Just go. I've heard the final fight is really good.
So the abbreviated version is that the game's teaching you to use your gravity gun throughout the game. It's teaching you to use a vehicle to combine all these different things and to get around. And basically, it just puts it all together. It's taught you how to fight a certain type of enemy. And then it introduces one new wrinkle and then says, here, you can do all these things at once. It's just a great multitasking part where it's fun, and there's no single way about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people decide that they're going to ram
certain enemies with the vehicle, others aside, figure out that and throwing an engine block with it is like massively lethal. And there's just any number of ways about it. I thought that was like very, you know, fun, and it made sense. And
I loved that, and that was all the difference in the world to me, because I did not beat that final fight of Half-Life 2 Episode 2 in the first try at all. It took me a bunch of tries, but it never got me aggravated, because I felt like they've given me all the tools here, and I know that I am failing to use them correctly. I know that if I just practice this, I'll get it. It like felt totally, it was hard, but it felt totally fair. And when I did it, it was completely satisfying. Whereas now I feel like if I beat this fucking thing, it's just going to be some random luck. Like, oh God, thank God I was able to like run away at this minute half.
And throw a grenade through my legs and let it bounce.
Yeah.
I thought the bosses, and to go the other way for positive examples, like in Resident Evil 4, worked really well.
Oh, they
all
great.
Had some gimmick to them, but none of them, they all seemed to be difficult, but none of them were actually.
I mean, Zelda
difficult.
Bosses are notoriously fantastic. I mean, they're always great. I mean, I think Super Mario Galaxy so far, I mean, I like talking about teaching you everything you need to know until you get to that final stage, you know. Same thing there. I mean, I think Nintendo does a really good job with boss battles. Though I have to say, you know, I'm a big Metroid fan, but I think the Prime bosses after a while, like especially toward the end, just get, it's like, how many health bars can you really have, and how long am I fingers bleeding yet? Because that's basically what it comes down to.
Yeah. What was the one on the GameCube? Was that
1 and 2 Prime?
I guess it was the first one where there's this freaking like. I think it's an early boss, but I can never beat it, so I quit the game. It's like a giant plant.
It was like the first one.
It was the first one. Yeah. I couldn't beat it.
Wait till you see the...
Hey, it's a console game, so I don't get...
Wait till you see the end ones. They're annoying.
Well, no, I won't see it.
I don't know.
You can YouTube it. You can just watch it, then.
I didn't have too much trouble with the Metroid Prime, but I sometimes have a lot of trouble with boss battles, and sometimes it's the opposite. You were just saying how much you liked Resident Evil 4. I remember buying the rocket launcher in Resident Evil 4 and saving it up for the moment. Yep. I'm like, I bought this rocket launcher, man. I'm waiting until something big jumps out.
I did that for one of the boss fights.
The rocket launcher in that the big boss battle between discs where it's like you're in this big room and I forget.
A big plant thing?
And
you have to,
there's like one weak spot and I shoot a rocket at it and he dies in the first like 10 seconds of the boss
battle. I did the same exact thing.
The most anticlimactic thing I've ever seen. Like I'd been saving this rocket launcher and then it was just over. I didn't even know what the point of the boss.
That kind of thing's fine because I mean you pay for it and if use it as a result, maybe not one hit, because the other, what do they call the big things, the gigantes? Gigante, like,
those are really
two
cool
rockets to kill those.
Yeah,
and it's a way there if you do get frustrated and you're like, I'm sick of doing this and shooting it and waiting for the like goop to come out of his head so I can shoot that or jump up and stab it.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna hit this guy with the rocket. I thought that's it.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes I think boss battles, like, have too much to bear. I mean, you're talking about how they're sort of the way that we have, climax and conflict resolution in games.
Right.
And considering everyone plays these things differently, you don't really know if they're really going to get the experience they're supposed to have. I mean, ideally, you would get to your boss in The Witcher and have this, like, great battle where you win by the skinnier teeth.
Right.
You're victorious and you feel great about it, but everyone, you know, is going to have some weird experience with
right.
it.
I mean, getting the tension right, but not for tension, not difficulty.
Right,
not
and using. I think the reason that I'm so hostile about it here is because I was up to that point, I was liking this game so much. I thought that they totally nailed the combat, so it was so disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Shoot, we're getting a hand signal here. And Sean, we keep not talking about what we promised you we'd get to talk about.
You're the one who asked to leave, right?
I could leave and let you guys continue.
I don't want to hear about it. I can go on.
No, you can.
It's the same every week. But every week I keep wanting to talk about Company Heroes opposing Fronts.
You've been selling that game hardcore online lately.
I have.
I don't mean selling it.
I have just
not
as
like
a,
getting money for it.
As a natural byproduct of being like genuinely in love with it, you know? I mean, when you like something and you want other people, in the same way you want your daughter to listen to the music you listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've been trying to get everybody on EGM to play Orange Box. I've been every day. I'm like, gotta play this, and everybody's doing it, and everybody's loving it. So,
and I know sometimes, you know, back when I was in high school, I told my friends like, man, you've got to make out with my girlfriend. She is such an awesome kisser. Oh, like, come on, you got to come back to my place and try her.
The rest of your band.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That went by. Did you that went by unnoticed? Was
last week? Yeah, you were talking about something about your band, and Jeff said yeah. all of your band has been in your wife.
Yeah,
rather than whatever it was.
Yeah. Well,
I
to
said
me it was like
backwards, and we all.
I heard him right. I was just like, yeah,
right.
That's how you swing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the hard thing about the difficult thing about talking about this game for me is that I don't have extensive experience with RTSs, not the same extent that I do with FPSs, where I played almost every one made in the past, you know, however many years. So I could say what I like about, I've always been able to say what I like about it, but not be able to say that, well, this is absolutely unique to this game.
Right.
So that's kind of made me hesitant to like really jump in the way that I might ordinarily do, you know, with the first-person shooter discussion.
Well, I've read some of the stuff that you've written online about that, and, like, a lot of it is similar, in fact, to Relic's other franchise, mm-hmm. Dawn of War, which came first. So a lot of what developed out of Company Heroes started there.
Came from Dawn of War.
Yeah.
Right.
And Dawn of War, of course, devolved from other games. So,
and those good things are, I mean, you know, in a schematic way of approaching it is to say that instead of having the usual rock, paper, scissors where, you know, if someone has this type of unit, I have to use this type of unit. And the more of this type of unit, the better. Or, you know, the traditional movement through the phases of early, you know, initial combat, mid-level stuff. And then when you've maxed out your tree, then you just bring out your big guns. Mm-hmm. So in Company Heroes, a unit that you have at the very beginning of the game is useful the entire time. And you gain veterancy with them. So if you have a rifle squad that you start off with as Brits, they might survive the entire battle and they will continue to be useful to you the whole time. That's good because instead of just constantly worrying about, well, I have to have more of these or, you know, I have to just do specifically this sort of thing to counter this, you're able to experiment and all sorts of random stuff can happen. And of course it looks great. So an example of something that would happen that you might not have planned is, you know, we were playing this 4v4 match and we know that the opponent is able to call in reinforcements down this one road. We figured out the road that they were coming in on. So we said, let's go back there. Let's land a glider there, take some commandos, and start to set up explosive charges along this highway so that we can detonate them when they bring in some more Panthers or something to rout us. But so we got caught with our pants down when we were doing this, and they sent over just this huge 6 squads of infantry, mixed infantry, you know, anti-tank guys, you know, light machine gun squads. So we had already had the bombs placed, so we said, let's run back to the far corner of the map and pop smoke. And the way that works is, like, it gives them a fog of war so they can't see you. They're going to have to get right next to you to find you. So that meant that they had to walk right down the path where all the explosives were just to get nose-to-nose with us to see us. So when they did that, then we blew up the explosives, and it blew up, like, the equivalent of, like, 60 guys. And they all go flying. But that was almost the majority of that player's army at the time. And so it was just devastating, you know. I mean, he kept playing, but we were like, oh, God, dude, I would have wanted to just drop from the game at that point. So moments like that are awesome. And it's part of the fun is, you know, you go – it's really a real-time tactics game. I mean, the way strategy and tactics are used interchangeably doesn't make sense here. But the strategy is before you play, and that's really fun. You say, this is what I know tends to happen in this game every time I play it. Let's try to put together a broad plan. We're going to, like, focus all of our resources on taking this one area of the map. And again, instead of just I play victory points, so instead of just getting to the other person's base and wiping it out, you want to capture and hold territory. And that's another thing that makes the game unique from, say, you know, Command and Conquer or something like that.
Right. The Dawn of War games are the ones that first started using that. You know, they had the idea of the control points, mm-hmm. You know, capturing parts of the map, which really sort of discourages turtling.
Right. You can't sit in your base and build up stuff and agree to fight at the end when you've got your good units. It means that you have to get what you have out there immediately and use them to the best of your ability. You know? So you're constantly doing that, and it's fun, and then you get it. And the game's like flip-flop a lot more. Instead of just pushing one side, gradually pushing into the other's base, you gain and lose control of these points, and you get down to the clock. The timers are ticking because you have tickets like in Battlefield. And you say, okay, crap, there's 3 victory points on this map, and you have to hold the majority of them to keep the ticker from going down on your side. And we've got 1, but they have the other 2. And we've been so far just butting our heads, you know, hopelessly trying to take this one spot. Let's all of a sudden change our plan and go for the other one. And then you do something like you parachute a bunch of guys in, land in gliders, or if you're, you know, Panzer Elite, you throw in a quick and mobile force and overwhelm them that way. So that stuff's all fun. But
It's kind of just that, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, when you go to bed and you think about a game, it's the ideal game for that because you strategize at that point and then you say, okay, let's play the game. And then you try to implement that, but then you've got to make it work with the tactics that are responding to the specifics of the other person's play, mm-hmm. you know.
You know what would be an interesting game for you to try if you haven't would be StarCraft because, you know, this is a game that's online popularity and the fact that there's professional leagues of it now is for a reason.
Right.
Because you have three different sides that are totally different from each other that have totally different strategies. And, you know, every game plays out in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I think going back, maybe I could see it and it'll work like chess where it's just timeless. But I would wonder about little stuff that the people play with are connoisseurs of the genre.
Yeah.
They insist to me that, like, no, you're not going to like anything else because what I like is the specificity of actions in Company Heroes where if there's a building, you can get your guys in the building and then you gain, you know, additional defensive properties or whatever. You can set up a machine gun in a window and your field of fire is exactly as it would think. If you kill someone, you could pick up their weapon. So then immediately your lieutenant who is walking around basically commanding orders now is a Panzerschreck. And so now you can group him with someone else and he's useful anti-tank.
Right. Okay.
I mean, all
that
kind of stuff.
You can compare the sophistication.
Trenches and using cover too. So like if there's like a wall and if you move your guys to that, then they'll fight more effectively from there.
I mean, it would be more like a chess thing or a Go thing. It would be going back in time to see a rudimentary form of this genre.
But those are fine, though, because, I mean, I don't think you add stuff to chess doesn't make it any better. I mean, it is what it is. I'm just kind of questioning, is it that state? Is it more like a chess or is it more like the difference between, like, Battlefield 42 and Battlefield 2, where you're going to miss the fact that you can't join squads and they can't spawn on the squad
leader? Well, to me personally, my opinion is that it would be more like chess. I mean, you may feel completely different about it. I mean, for sure, there's a million things you can do in Company of Heroes that you can't do in StarCraft. But to me, the core of it is so awesome, like chess, that, you know, maybe there's enough to hold on to. It would be interesting
to
see.
Try it.
In fact,
closest I've compared is like Command & Conquer 3, which I thought was like dreadfully boring compared to Company of Heroes.
To me, and I've played like very, very few strategy games, and most all of them were console-centric, which probably means that they were just totally lame. But, you know, StarCraft seems a little more appealing to me because I can at least digest what's going on, whereas something like Company of Heroes, whenever you're talking about it, I'm like, you know, I just don't understand how this game comes together. You know, it sounds like everything in the world of war is available to you, and I don't understand, like, how you get into a game with unlimited possibilities.
The best thing to do with games like these too are play the single player campaigns.
Yeah.
You know, if you jump into a multiplayer game with a guy like Sean, you're going to get your ass handed to you. But, you know, the single player games do a good job of, you know, only, you know, like any good game, you just start off with a few things and it ramps you up. Okay, here's how, now in this next mission, we're going to add air units.
Is that how you learned how to play the game or?
It is. Let me say something on that. Like, the trick, I agree, is to convince someone that it's a game that's within their realm of playability. And you write certain things off for various reasons. And this is like a kind of a parallel experience for me as to what happened with the combat flight simulator IL-2, where who plays a flight simulator, right? You need a controller. You got a million buttons. What's engine pitch? I mean, what's prop pitch, right? Mm-hmm. Why do I want to mess with like the fuel mixture in a plane? And then you start doing it. And then as you play it and you gradually ease yourself into these things, you're like, oh, I don't have to play with all those sim things on. I can turn them on one by one as I understand them. Or I should just play it and see what happens rather than just being – you know, like you hear about a book so much and you're like, there's no way I'm going to read this book. I'm not going to get it. And then you read it and you're like, oh, like I totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just needed to actually try and do something with it. But so – there is that intimidation factor, and I think it would be greatly beneficial for makers of these kind of games to do everything in their power to address it because I see it over and over again. You know, a lot of people are hear me talking about it and are buying it and want to play, and they don't know how to learn. So, like Jeff says, if
but you also
go
make
into
it sound like the high-level stuff is what's enjoyable about it.
It is. I mean, it is. And I think you get to that. I think you should be able to get to that. But it is absolutely. The more experienced you are, the more enjoyable the game is because you're able to make the game – sort of dance to your tune.
But that's the case with everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you get to a point where you're playing a different game than the beginners are playing.
So yeah. If you play the campaign stuff, you have to understand that it's going to be entirely different from, I mean,
tactics that you're using against the computer are going to be absolutely useless in an online match. But the reason to play it is because you at least get a familiarity for how you create these units, how you produce them, when you can, and you still get a sense for what works. So even if you're playing against the computer and say you're British and you're building these emplacements, these mortar emplacements, and you also build machine guns next to them. So the machine gun stops guys from coming in and throwing grenades into the mortar pit, and the mortar pit stops enemy vehicles that have their own long arm things from just coming up and blowing up the machine gun, or blowing up the machine gun from afar, you know?
Yeah.
So you can figure that out a little bit in single player, and then you just kind of continue to build on that, and you start to see how things are useful in different ways, and useful in, importantly, in combination, because it's never like there's never one solution. So that's again where the rock paper scissors analogy works, because, you know, like I said, the machine gun stops the infantry that's able to stop the mortar. But because you're able to combine them all, it's more of a game where you're able to, technically, if you want, have rock, paper, and scissors as the hand you play all at once. But then there are even more. It would be, you know, if you somehow were...
I'm not high enough to understand what that means. It's like rock, paper, and scissors all at once.
Well, say, in rock, paper, scissors, you have one choice. You play... Your hand that you play is either rock, paper, or scissors. Mm-hmm. And no matter what... It has a strength against another the other person's hand, and it also has a corresponding weakness. But now I'm saying, say, for example... Again, with the machine gun and mortars, if one of those is rock and the other's paper, then you can get scissors in the form of maybe a sniper, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then you use all of those together, the sniper to spot far off stuff. And then with all three of those, you're technically at that point, then it's not just a matter of they had the right, they had the luck of the draw or anticipation and said, hey, they're probably going to build a machine gun crew. I'm going to build mortars and blow up the machine gun. This way you say, well, I'm going to send a sniper over and snipe their mortar. I mean, you, depending on how you field those things that you have every option available to you. And then as you play, then you see, you know, that there are greater options and they're fun to use in conjunction. And they will be things like, You'll get ultra decryption as the British, and that's basically, you know, you'll get these notices on your screen every time your enemy's building or fielding a new vehicle or a squad or a tank, you know. And so if you get this notice that, hey, they just brought in a King Tiger or a Hummel, which would be an artillery piece that can almost launch across the entire map, provided they have some sort of observer there, you can say, even though it's in the fog of war, I'm going to land a glider with a light tank in it right there because I know that's where – I know they just brought this thing in. The tank's going to come out, and that light tank is going to be great against their mobile artillery, and I'm going to blow it up then. They're going to immediately take out this tank because it's going to be one shitty little tank in their back base, but I'm going to get their mobile arty, which cost 800 manpower, and my tank only cost me 300.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds really complicated, but it's, I think just experiencing it – and it, that's the fun of it, though. So let me not just apologize for the complexity, but kind of like celebrate it, right? I mean, we're so used to games that are fall into one of these categories and you know, areas of familiarity. And it's really eye-opening to play something that's outside of that comfort range. And to, like I said, you know, when you read a book outside of what you assumed was your comfort range, and then you find yourself really liking it, and you end up liking it a lot more than books in your comfort range. And that becomes your new thing that you want to, you know, become an expert in. And I think it's kind of like that. It might not work for everyone. It happened to me with Flight Sims, and it's definitely happening again now with RTS because of this. So
that's probably more, you know, that just talking about these types of games with people like me who don't play them, it's hard to convey what the experience is.
Yeah, because you don't have any, like, concise, you know, reference to when I say a Hummel, like, what's that? It would be like if me and you were talking and your wife was hearing us talk about Team Fortress and you're like a level 3 sentry. She's like, well,
also all this military culture stuff. I mean, I think maybe I'm waiting for, you know, a strategy game to be about like West Side Story. You know, to where you have like units, different dance moves that do like different, you know, damages.
Well, you're probably going to get a link from some reader now.
That would be pretty amazing. Someone just out there, please make a West Side Story
strategy.
And
there's definitely
game.
You know, like if you're more, say, a fantasy guy,
yeah,
like, you know, Relics Dawn of War series, like we're saying, is that's like the fantasy strategy. That's the, you know, that's the Warhammer version of this kind of gameplay that everyone's talking about.
And so certainly, some people like Ryan likes that more. Like I asked him why
I like that
play.
More.
And for me, I like to know, like, so I see like an Ostwind or a Wurmbowind, I actually know what that is, and there is at least some correlation to my familiarity with reading history and stuff that, okay, these guys should be shitting in their pants right now, and, you know.
Right, you and I have the talk all the time where you'll say, oh, it's the blah blah mission, and I'll go, oh, the one with the plane and the thing and the door, and you go, yeah, that's what I just said. Yeah, you know, the one of the great training RTSs for me was Age of Empires from Ensemble. Any of the Age of Empires, and one great thing they do, and you'll just have to remind me if Company Heroes does this, is that they have skirmish games against the AI. So they're not, it's not part of the campaign where there's a goal. It's basically a multiplayer game mm-hmm. against AI opponents. And what I used to do in Age of Empires,
that is a good way to learn,
right? Because then you see. Because the AI is, in the Ensemble games, at least, is pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is I would just play a skirmish game against like two or three AI opponents, and I'd stop it after just like 5 or 10 minutes. And I would just see – I would stop and then look at the stats there and just see what the computer had done versus what I had done. And I learned so much because invariably the computer would have like five times as many resources as me or something else. And I would – at first I was like – this is fucking cheating. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Then I realized, nope, actually, it's not. That's just smart.
That's how I learned. Watch the replays. Right. You know? I mean, so few people do it. It never occurs to them. They just keep asking, should I go play campaign again?
Right.
Well, for one, I guess
watch replays against
you could play
humans,
the AI,
right?
But play, yeah, when someone kicked your ass, you have that ability in almost yeah. every RTS in existence to watch the game from their point of view uh-huh. after it's done. And at faster speed, yeah. so it doesn't take forever. Yeah. You could say, oh, they built these units rather than these. These seem to be effective in these circumstances. Uh-huh. They went for these points rather than the other ones, you know, and you're able to look. I mean, just look and say, oh, that's how I got my ass kicked.
Right. And if you have a good friend who can actually do it with you. You know, my Jedi trainer was Elliot Chin, who used to be at Computer Gaming World, and then he was at Blizzard, and now he's at Sega. And he taught me how to play RTSs because he and I used to play Warcraft together, Warcraft 2.
Yeah, I was going to say, how does that stack up?
He would completely kick my ass every time. Yeah. It was very tough love thing, but he would kick my ass and in a mean way too. Like the thing I always remember him doing is he came over and he would build guard towers at my resource nodes. So basically I couldn't mine anything and the game would be over in like 10 minutes because I'd have
but
no money.
He's not teaching you any. He's just like
he's griefing.
Well, of course he was. But and I'd be going, you fucker, like game's over. But that was like a lesson. He's like, you got to protect your resources, yeah. Jeff.
Wax
and
on,
then from then
wax
on,
off.
Exactly. Wax on.
Yes.
Wax off.
But what strikes me with this whole conversation is that video games are so diverse and bizarre. Like what does what we're talking about have to do with people who like to get on a little plastic mat and move their feet to like J-pop songs?
Yeah.
What is it? How are these things related?
Or even like what we're doing, you don't even have to go that far. I mean, even what I'm doing with like, you know, a racing game or something.
Yeah.
Or the difference between that and Half-Life, you know?
Yeah.
I went back and forth last night between Mass Effect and Guitar Hero 3. Speaking of boss battles.
I'd like some of that chocolate and that peanut butter. Yeah. Whoever can come up with a sci-fi adventure game using the guitar controller will have my money.
That's what they'll have to do, though, because they'll run out of... Well, maybe not, because they can always add new songs, but they'll put, like, an RPG mode. You know, like, when a fighting game's on, like, part five?
Look at Brutal Legend, the Double Fine game. It's like, you know, it's got the mm-hmm. whole music thing, but it's like...
Does it use the guitar?
Who knows? They'll probably put it in the mode than that.
That would be cool. You have it on your back and you swing it around like when it's time to get in a fight. That'd be great. Rock them to death.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, those are converging already, so.
We're ready to roll, but last thing, because I couldn't get enough fellow GFWers to play COH with me, me, Rory, and the gang are playing the Relic guys.
Really?
Next week.
Nice.
They're probably going to kick our ass, but it'll be fun.
We got to post this match.
We'll have to practice what I preach and watch the replay and say, that's
uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Or there's the chance maybe we'll win because we're not playing their balance team, which would be just insane. That mm-hmm. would be like one of us saying, like, oh, yeah, I'll fight Butterbean or whatever, you know, because those are the guys that like know every exploit and play nonstop. But so the design guys.
Is he still alive?
That's awesome.
Butterbean?
I have no idea.
Huffle,
I don't even know
huffle.
Why that came to mind because I just thought of someone getting their ass kicked and I visualized Johnny Knoxville getting punched upside the head in a sporting goods store.
First movie?
Yeah.
All right. I think we're done.
The ramble is over.
We done, but we're disbanding the brodeo.
maybe we'll have more GFW people around next time. Or maybe not. Maybe we'll stick with you guys.
I'd like that. I had a great time. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for
joining
us.
You're always welcome back.
Us.
It sucked.
Brian and Bobito.
And we out.
This One Up podcast is brought to you by the laptop experts, makers of the Toshiba Satellite X205, a laptop with enough power to destroy a small planet. Visit www.toshiba.com/experts.